This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Thursday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. On today's Noon Business Hour, also how Mayor Lightfoot is going to plan to plug a billion-dollar hole and robotic shorts. It's Technology Thursday. We'll get into that later on in the show, how employees are being allowed to achieve more in the workplace, way more productive with robotic shorts. Right now, there's relatively calm rhetoric in the U.S.-China trade war today. How long is it going to last? Andrew Bush is joining us, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, also a political economist at andrewbush.com, based here in Chicago. Andy, okay, so it's calm now on the trade war front, but that could change before we're done talking here today.
Yes, it could. We're always subject to new tweets coming from the president. But what's good about what's been happening is that you think back to last Friday, and I know it's hard to do that, but the president came out and told U.S. companies to get out of China. You know, flash forward to Monday, boy, different tone coming from the president, said that they were going to restart talks, that China had called us, and that, you know, things are getting together. But I think today is really interesting because the Chinese could have, you know, increase the tit for tat between the United States and China with tariffs, and they chose not to. And they also said that they're going to not escalate or are opposed to escalating trade tensions. And I think that's a great start, that maybe somebody had to say, okay, let's just go on hold. Let's get these talks going. And so I think the markets are very happy about that. And you see all the trade-related stocks from Boeing to Caterpillar and Deere and Micron Technologies all are rallying today on the hopes that something's going to come and develop a positive trend to getting some resolution from this.
And the fact is, I mean, at some point it will be resolved. I don't know that anyone expected it to drag on this long, but at some point there will be resolution. And is that really what traders, investors, are they really wanting, just to find out what's going to happen going forward? What's the new normal?
Yeah, and I think there's going to be winners and losers. So I would just push back a little bit, Cisco, and say, we hope that it's going to end, but it's the way that it ends and what comes out of it that really matters. Because you know, you can say that this is a terrible way of approaching the trade issues, but honestly, intellectual property, financial services overall in China, we just have big issues with the Chinese and the way that they treat our companies. And there's all sorts of things that the Chinese do that not only cheat on the WTO rules that we're all supposed to follow, but they also, through regulatory methods, they also shut out U.S. companies. So what the president is trying to do is good in the sense of he's trying to get that playing field leveled. The methodology, most people would disagree with, but at some point you have to do something. Otherwise, it's just so much in the Chinese favor, and we continue to lose out.
Talk about the challenge now with the Fed, as the president has engaged them politically, essentially trying to tell them what to do and complaining when they don't do it, and some pressure right on the Fed to sort of stay neutral.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. So this comes from the ex-president of the New York Federal Reserve, Bill Dudley's comment saying that the Fed should actively engage in behavior that would not help the president get reelected. This is nothing short of astonishing, and I would hope the Fed overall, the Federal Reserve Board in D.C. and the FOMC, really distance themselves from this guy, because what he's actually – asking the Fed to do is to take on policy, to make decisions that we elect officials to make decisions on, to influence the outcome of elections. And just as a reminder, I always tell people the Fed is the biggest player right now. It's the most important thing in the financial markets because of what it does on monetary policy. If it starts to go down this path of picking winners and losers on the political side, that's a horrible thing. And what Dudley said, just really even more astonishing, is he said, well, maybe the Fed shouldn't cut interest rates and stimulate the economy to hurt President Trump in the next election. I don't know if he even thought through that, like the millions of people that could be negatively impacted by a recession and what that would mean. It boggles the mind. I'm almost apoplectic, and I speak all the time, so that's a big thing in Cisco.
Andy, always good to have you on the show. Appreciate your analysis. Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. He's a political economist at andrewbush.com. Several closely watched economic reports are out today. Let's break them down with the help of Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com, based in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Greg, let's begin with pending home sales. In July, they actually fell about 2.5%.
Yeah, that's right, Cisco. Well, your low mortgage rates can only do so much. That limited inventory of homes available for sale, particularly for first-time buyers, that's a real issue. A strained affordability, that continues to hold back the housing market. So, you know, even though we've seen mortgage rates fall to the lowest level in about 3 years, it's not providing much juice for the housing market at this point.
And when it comes to lowering rates, even if it's, say, a half a percent or something, are we in most cases talking about a huge amount of savings when you're talking about just the whole process of refinancing and you're talking about those closing costs? I'm wondering if that may be a reason that a lot of people aren't jumping at this.
The drop we've seen in mortgage rates is really significant. We've seen them go from above 5% last November, now well below 4%. Somebody who's looking at a $200,000 loan, I mean, that's $150 a month difference. So, I mean, it's real savings, whether you're looking to refinance the loan you have or you're out home shopping. It's like getting the house, on sale relative to what it had been just last year. That being said, the run-up in home prices over the last few years has really stretched that affordability. So even if it's come back a little bit, for a lot of first-time home buyers, it just hasn't come back enough. And then the other issue is you can't buy it if it's not for sale. That limited inventory has just been an overhang on the housing market for years, and that's why we've seen it really pretty tepid throughout the economic recovery.
Yeah, in general, you mentioned the housing prices that are going up. A lot of folks, though, still dealing with the fact that they bought pre-recession, and the housing prices are going up, but just not far enough yet.
Well, if you bought at the top of the market, or maybe even if you bought before that, but then took out all the equity at the top of the market, then yeah, you're still on the wrong side of the equation at this point. But in a lot of areas, if you've managed to hold on and you kind of kept your hands off the equity, you've seen that value come back, and you have an even greater equity stake now by virtue of the principal pay down that's happened over the last decade.
Let's talk about jobless claims, up slightly. Anything to worry about there?
No, still at extremely low levels. It really kind of underscores the continued strength that we're seeing in the labor market.
And is that then giving any sort of confidence for the wider economy that can keep chugging along?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at the GDP number, it was revised from 2.1% to 2%. 2% is trend rate of growth for the economy. The robust consumer spending was the strongest in 5 years. So 2/3 of economic output comes from the consumer. The consumer's in good shape, and that's really the crux of it. As long as the consumer stays in a good position, the economy's going to continue to chug along.
Good analysis. Thank you. Always appreciate you being here. Greg McBride, Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. Up next, Mayor Lightfoot set to reveal her financial plan for Chicago, and there's lots of challenges.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Mayor Lightfoot set to present a long-term financial plan for Chicago during her inaugural State of the City address. That's this evening at 6 o'clock. You can watch it on our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com. How's it going to go? Let's get a preview and some analysis from Tom Serafin, founder and CEO of Serafin and Associates here in Chicago. Tom, always good to have you on the Noon Business Hour. It seems like Mayor Lightfoot is going to have quite a hole to fill here.
Yes, no easy answers, as the Chicago Sun-Times said this morning. Cisco, it's good to be with you this afternoon. She's got a big task. She's been there for 100 days, which gives her enough time to find the washroom in City Hall. But she has been able to take a look at the numbers, and she's going to have to tell the people exactly what she's inherited. And I think it's a tremendous idea on her part to address this to the entire city and go live on television, because it's a shared experience, a shared problem. We're going to have to take deep cuts in how we do business in the city of Chicago. She's already announced a hiring freeze, but it's going to go much worse than that for a lot of people because they're going to be higher taxes.
Well, when it comes to those challenges, I mean, Mayor Emanuel also had challenges, and he raised property taxes significantly. But a lot of this is all because of pensions and the fact that she may do one thing this year, but next year and the year after that, some of these costs are going to keep rising.
Right, and it's up to Springfield to actually provide that kind of relief, because based on what the Supreme Court has ruled a couple times on our pension issues in Illinois, that we need a constitutional amendment actually changing the law, and that will change the law for pensions as we go further down the road. It won't do anything for people who are currently getting pensions today. So this is an immediate issue that she has to deal with. You know, there was a talk at one time during the campaign for mayor that the deficit was $558 million. And then, word got out it was $740 million. And now we're talking about $1 billion. I mean, the city has to run with a different business model. Computerization and all those things have to be taken into consideration. She's really got to start building from the ground up. And I think that's incredibly important for her. And take a look at the schools and crime are two biggest issues. Crime is down a little bit, but the schools, and we're at 360,000 kids in our school. 10 years ago, we had 400,000. But the teachers are pounding on the door. They want a strike. They want a 16% increase over 3 years. She's offering them over 5 years. It's a great jump for the teachers. I don't see the strike. I can't see a strike at this point, but that's also looming on the forefront. So she's got a lot on her plate to deal with right now.
She's got the opportunity, obviously, if she decides to raise property taxes. Okay, not popular, but that's one thing she can do. One thing that's also been talked about, though, is a new revenue stream by taxing some people who provide services to people in the city.
Yeah, they call that LaSalle Street tax, sales tax on services, consultants, lawyers, advertising agencies, PR firms. I mean, you could expand that. At one time, I saw a list in Springfield. There were 160 different services that could be taxed. She's going to need help from Springfield on that one as well. And the complication there is Springfield's trying to raise taxes with this new accelerated graduated income tax, where they have an amendment on the for the Constitution to be voted on by the people of Illinois in 2020. I don't know if she can depend a great deal on Springfield because they have so many other issues, but she's going to have to do it right here at home, and she's going to have to bring all of us to the table because there's going to be a lot of shared sacrifice. Now, for a lot of property owners in Chicago, they didn't create the mess, but everybody's going to have to participate in cleaning this mess up, and it is a mess.
Well, we'll see what she proposes tonight at 6. You'll be able to watch the mayor's speech on our website, WBBMNewsRadio.com.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. The latest boost in worker productivity is coming from robotic clothing. We'll learn about it. It's Technology Thursday. Banks could play a role in a possible recession. We'll talk to an expert on the financial sector. Mayor Lightfoot is expected to reveal parts of her budget plan during the State of the City address this evening. Hurricane Dorian continues to gain strength as it moves toward Florida. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 329 points. The NASDAQ is up 120, and the S&P is up 37. Oil is up 1.5%. Beautiful sunshine in Chicagoland, heading to a high of 86. There is a chance for some rain and maybe even thunderstorms, though, late in the afternoon into the evening hours. Right now, 76 O'Hare, 78 Midway, and 76 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are higher today. To talk about it, we're joined by Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors, based in Albany, New York. Hugh, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, we've had some really bad days recently, and the markets, particularly the bond market, has been telling us that, look, the Federal Reserve is going to have to cut interest rates another 3, maybe 4 times, and that would only happen if the economy had a deep problem. And I think the message of the markets today is, look, we've been sending a message that the economy would have a deep problem. And maybe that was a bit overstated. And that's particularly true today when we have a little bit of a sort of a toning down of the possible retaliation by the Chinese on the trade side of things. So those things are starting to soften up a little bit. So maybe the economy might have a recession. We don't know. But it's not going to be as bad as the markets had been telling us, say, for a couple of days in the last week or so.
Now, for an investor that has a little longer-term view and not necessarily swayed by the day-to-day news, are they just waiting to find out how this whole thing is resolved whenever it gets resolved?
Some investors, of course, can't sleep at night because of the volatility, and I've heard from a lot of clients that say that. And so they've reduced their exposure to the stock market. They've reduced their target in equities, say, from the 50% level down to 30 or 40%, just to sort of sit this one out. The others are, of course, not sitting it out and watching the day-to-day volatility in the markets and just living with it. But everybody's asking the question, look, this has been the longest bull market and the longest recovery in history. Sooner or later, it's going to end. Trees don't grow to the sky, and they're saying, do we have more left on the upside? Is there further to go in the bull market, or should we bail out now? And nobody has the answer to that. They're all watching and waiting.
Yeah, that makes it sort of feel like a gamble, right? I mean, if you get out now, just before some sort of a recession or significant downturn in the markets, well, then you're a genius. But if you decide to go out on the sidelines now and it keeps growing, then you lose out on a lot of gains.
It's unpredictable, and that's the bottom line. Nobody knows. And so given the fact that it's unpredictable, some are playing on one side, some are playing it on the other side, but it is completely unpredictable. I just point out that this, again, has been the longest bull market in history. The yield curve has sent a fairly clear message that sooner or later, probably later, meaning a year from today, we might have a bear market in a recession. But it's there may be some left on the upside in this bull market. The one thing that has been missing from this bull market is optimism, and you don't get optimism until you get a surge in prices. So we might be having a surge in prices that might carry with it a surge in optimism, and that's when the bull market will end. But right now, not enough optimism to say the bull market will end. It'll end, but it's not going to end, looks like, right now, because there's just not widespread optimism.
So for people who just don't want to pull it all out and go into cash or something, dividend stocks, I mean, maybe get a little income, there's some pretty decent yields out there.
If you want to do something in your portfolio right now, and you're really asking the right question or making the right statement, is build a little defense into your portfolio if you're uncertain, if you're worried, if you don't like the volatility. And the way you do that is emphasize utilities and consumer staple stocks, things like household products. And as you say, which is really important, buy either a mutual fund or some fund that has a dividend strategy. And remember, individual stocks with 2%, 3% dividend income, dividend yields, is really a good idea. They'll be good now for the 2%, but they'll also perform better if we ever do get a bear market. They are really the best performers in bear markets, and utilities have a whole lot of those kinds of stocks.
What did you make of, as earnings were being announced, specifically forward guidance, getting a sense that most companies are feeling positive about the next quarter, or are they a little confused about exactly what's going to go on, too?
I think they're very confused, and I think that not so much confused that they're not particularly optimistic, given the fact that they've been hammered or hit, at least, and hurt by tariffs. And there are a lot of companies that have been telling us that. And in response to that, and they've been downplaying their prospects for the future as far as their earnings are concerned, we've seen earnings estimates for the S&P 500 come down continuously for the last 2 months. Not a lot overall. We're still talking about 2% growth this year, maybe as much as 11% next year. But the estimates for earnings have been coming down in response to uncertainty about tariffs.
And when it comes to, I guess, looking forward to the future, I'm interested in some of these tech stocks, these FANG stocks, they were just all the rage for a while. But is there a little more uncertainty in whether those are necessarily a good bet?
You bet there's a lot of uncertainty there because they've had big moves to the upside in the past. And the second thing, which is really important, is that if we do see the end of the cycle, if we do see the start of a bear market accompanied by a recession, you can bet they're going to be the worst performers. Those and consumer discretionary stocks, the economically sensitive sectors of the market will perform poorly. The consumer staples, utilities, the so-called defensive sectors will perform the best. So you bet, there's a lot of vulnerability in the technology area and some of those FANG stocks, which might be classified more as communication services right now. But nevertheless, regardless of how they're classified, they'd be poor performers in a bear market. And so be careful there.
Thanks so much, Hugh Johnson. Good analysis. Hugh Johnson, Chairman of Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors. Up next, Technology Thursday, better worker productivity through better pants.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour, and this afternoon we're finding out how clothing and tech are coming together to boost worker productivity. We welcome Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, robotic shorts. It sounds a little scary, but it also sounds like there's some opportunities here. Tell us about this.
Well, it sounds like I wish I had them in college. I'll just say that. it's basically the concept is being developed at Harvard. It's called the Wyss Institute, although it's spelled W-Y-S-S. And at Harvard, the Wyss Institute is basically tasked with finding or creating, I should say, technologies that can basically be found in nature. In other words, adapting things that took millions of years to evolve, like imagining the shape of a honeycomb, and then using what they discover in nature to apply to sort of modern technology. And in this case, shorts you wear that reduce the stress, in this case, reduce strain by about 20 to 30% of an individual who wears them. So the result is folks who are either impaired, who have lost that much strength, can now sort of feel like they're operating at full strength, or boosting strength for folks who are in the line of work where they have to rescue people, for example.
So when it comes to rescue personnel on some sort of like a scene of an accident or something, or maybe even people in warehouses or that, it seems like there's a lot of uses for this potentially.
Many. In fact, they're already being tested in fulfillment centers around the country where people are lifting boxes, moving things back and forth. And basically, this is an effort, these exoskeletons, they call them, although they don't really look like the sort of traditional exoskeleton. When you look at them, it looks like somebody's wearing a pair of spandex shorts that basically have some appliques on them, small pieces of metal and other sort of materials. But really, they are trying to help people in those fulfillment centers move large objects without straining their back, for example. And it's having an enormously powerful effect. No surprise there. But it's the goal here, again, is to boost productivity of workers and also help people who have been impaired by injury.
And maybe to avoid injury as well. Seems like it could do that, too.
It could, although, there's a diminished marginal return here, right? If you make somebody stronger than they're used to, they might put themselves in situations that they are less qualified to be in. And by the way, it depends on your perspective, but a slightly different perspective on this. The DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, is also working with these guys at the Wyss Institute to think about helping soldiers who've been hurt, for one thing, but also potentially improving soldier performance out on the battlefield, meaning allowing those soldiers to perform better than they would have with just their own body.
And that, I guess that's good or bad, just depending on your perspective, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, again, everything can be turned. Look, Velcro was developed because astronauts needed to take things on and off without tying them when they were wearing gloves. And in space, that was obviously very important. But Velcro has been used for lots of stuff that was never anticipated when it was first created. So this is another example of that. We don't know where it's going to go. But in the end, the idea of strengthening people who have been weakened, helping people not get hurt as they are working, and potentially keeping people safer is certainly on the core of it. A good idea.
Well, like everything, okay, so now maybe it boosts you 20 or 30%, but as they continue to perfect the technology, why couldn't it go higher?
Oh, you know what? It's so interesting, and this is where things get really interesting. Think about the Olympics, an unrelated but related field. At first, people sort of looked I'm so sorry for you type expression when they saw people in the Paralympics who were amputees, for example. Well, now they're not doing that so much anymore because amputees can, in some cases now, because of technology, run faster in terms of pure speed than someone who is a whole body participant. Well, it's an interesting challenge, right? Ethically as well as mechanically. So you're going to make people stronger than they ever were. Are we going to see, if we're looking at darker outcomes, are we going to see people running faster than they should? You know, being stronger than they should, opening doors they shouldn't, and so forth. So it's an interesting challenge.
Yeah, I guess you think about it. I mean, it could be used by bad guys for bad purposes just as well as good guys.
That's right. I mean, try, you know, and the negative, of course, is try opening a can of eggs, you know, with a carton of eggs without breaking them if you're wearing these shorts. So, you know, there are unintended consequences. Again, the exciting thing is here that the Wyss Institute is using ideas they found in nature to essentially help people perform better and not get hurt in certain situations, or if they have been hurt, get stronger so they can perform, you know, they can be, you know, whole members, if you will, of modern society without needing help.
Thanks so much, Paul Hochman. Very interesting. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, joining us on this Technology Thursday, talking about the robotic shorts. This time tomorrow, Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, how banks could help cause a recession.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
America's banks could be a major factor in a potential recession. Let's learn more from Dick Bove, financial strategist at Odeon Capital Group, based in New York. Dick, always good to have you on the show. So what's going on here? I guess, what are the possibilities what banks could do?
Well, banks have two options at the present time. They can either continue to make loans at, you know, at very low, relatively low rates because interest rates are coming down. And in a market where the competitive environment is in an industrial recession, and where they make losses every time they originate a mortgage loan. Or they could stop making loans, and they could sell the loans that they have on their books, which have relatively high yields, to pension funds and insurance companies, which are looking for those yields, and put the money into buying securities. If they do that, they're going to make a heck of a lot more money than if they go out and originate loans. And J.P. Morgan, which is the largest bank in the United States, And the bank is so big that there's only one company in the United States that makes more money than J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan is already doing it. It sold $30 billion worth of loans so far this year, and it's using that money plus new deposits coming in to buy $74 billion worth of securities. So if you're a bank president, you got two options. You can make loans. If you make loans, you're not going to make very much money this quarter. Or B, you can stop making loans and sell them and buy securities. And if you do that, you're going to make a lot of money this quarter.
And so when you're, as you mentioned, when you're leading one of those banks, it's one thing to say, we may help prevent a recession if we, you know, if we go down one avenue. On the other, you need to make a profit.
Exactly. And that's the problem with banking. In other words, if banks choose not to grow their balance sheets, if they choose not to make loans, they have an economic function. And the economic function is to provide money to grow the private sector. If they stop doing that, then we'll go into a recession. And it'll be a recession the Fed can't stop, because the Fed can't reduce interest rates and force the banks to make loans. If the banks say we're not making loans because we can't make that much money doing it, but we can make a lot of money by buying securities, they're going to buy securities. That's going to impact the economy, and the Fed can't do anything about it.
Yeah, you mentioned, so that was actually my next question. There's really nothing that can be done about it if more banks decide to go down the road.
Exactly. In other words, if you had the top 10 banks in the United States, you know, decide to follow the policies that J.P. Morgan has been following now for 6 to 9 months, it will definitely slow the growth of the economy.
Really interesting. Thank you, Dick Bove, financial strategist, Odeon Capital Group, based in New York. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.